Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem, Shalom Bayis, Shir number 438. There is a book that was recommended to me by a few people called You and Me Equals We by Rabbi Yisrael Kloiman. He's a social worker. And the paraphrase of the side title is The Counterintuitive Path to a Stable Shalom Bayis. And the emes is that when I first started out researching and teaching the concepts of Shalom Bayis, the focus was a lot on giving, on Hakaras HaTov, on selflessness, giving of the other, which of course everyone agrees, including this author, that that is the ideal. That if each one, husband and wife, individually work on giving of the other, sharing and seeing each other's world, and sacrificing for each other, then you would have beautiful Shalom Bayis. There's no argument about the truth of that statement. But what I didn't realize when I first started, and I did give a few shiurim in the beginning, in regards to it, is that sometimes, and very often from what I realize now, that this vatranus, this overlooking, this giving in, has very, very often harmful effects in a marriage. And people think that they're doing the right thing by swallowing hurts all the time and by just working on themselves to let it go. And that could really poison the marriage, because if you're not at that point yet and you're struggling to let it go and you're having trouble letting it go and you let it fester because you're holding it in, it creates tremendous damage in marriage. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky gives Haskama on this Sefer. And he says that is a lot of work in this book, and has a lot of deep thoughts. He understands the kaychais of the souls, and he helped many people to be matzliach, and so on and so forth. So why does it say the word counterintuitive? Because again, he's going to talk about the concept of the openness of communication and learning how to give over to each other, even when they're displeased with one another, to communicate that in a healthy way, and that brings the closeness. So as much as it is often emphasized that the problems with Shalom Bayis is lack of good midos and lack of giving and so on, here you have where that very mida could be used in a harmful way, this giving in all the time, which causes a snowball effect and damage. So I'm going to start off here with what he explains in the beginning of the book, the introduction, which is entitled, What's Wrong with Giving In? And again, giving in is a good midah overall, and the author is going to agree with that. But you need to know, every couple, the dangers where sometimes giving in is a problem. It's wrong, and it'll hurt the marriage. So he says like this, it's week two of Shana and Zev's marriage. Shana returned to her job as an accountant. Zev returned to yeshiva. Friday rolls around. People set off the couple to Shana's parents. It's an hour ride away. And Zev asks his new wife as they're driving, did you call my bubby, my grandmother, did you call my bubby to wish her good Shabbos? And she says, no, I forgot. So he suggests maybe give her a call now. And she says, no, I need a little rest. Zev is confused, and he's thinking to himself, what's so difficult about her calling his bubby that she has to rest up for it? But he heard from his chassan teacher that said, no criticism, only acceptance, only appreciation. And so he keeps quiet. And Shana does not call his grandmother. And no matter how many times he requests it, she never calls. Why? What is the real reason she's not calling? is because that grandmother is intimidating, a bit intimidating to her. And she's having trouble getting through the courage of calling and interacting with her because she is somewhat fearful and intimidated of this grandmother's personality. Zev doesn't know the full extent of this because she never told this to Zev. And he keeps the peace and keeps quiet like he's told. 4 months later, Zev and Shana have a disagreement. He wants to be near his yeshiva for Shuas. She wants to be by her parents for Shuas. She says it gives them nachas to have us there. And Zev says, but Shuas is without my charusa is going to be lame. The whole Indian Shuas is about learning. And Shana answers, I know, I'm very sorry, but what can I do? My mother's expecting us already. This is my family. And then he blows up. He says, your family? What about my family? And you can't even pick up the phone, not even one time, to call my poor old grandmother? So what happened over here? An argument over where to spend Shuas is a small, tiny speck in the ocean, like he says. They are both Zev and Shana, the nice people, well-meaning people, highly functional individuals. They're both motivated to have Shalom Bayis. They both want Shalom Bayis, and they want to work hard on their Shalom Bayis. But this conflict resolution, that the only thing that they know how to do in handling conflicts is Vatranus. What is Vatranus again? It's giving over one's right for the benefit of another person or a greater cause. And that backfires very, very often. So, because rather than having Shalom, it blows up. It's like a ticking time bomb ready to blow up. And they don't have any other way. They weren't taught the skills of how to resolve conflicts other than that way. And that way very often is harmful. So, and then he explains in this example, what's the harm in it? So he explains, Shana, intending to please Zev, finally agrees to call his bubby, even though she found it difficult to do so. But rather than telling her husband, I'm sorry, Zev, I have to work up to this one, she makes me uncomfortable, that's the healthier approach, to tell the husband honestly that I'm having difficulty because she's a strong personality. But instead of doing that, she kept agreeing with him but procrastinating. But if she it would have expressed her reservation to her husband, this is why I'm not calling your grandmother, or I'm having trouble calling your grandmother, then the husband may have been able to break the ice, may have been worked with her to see that his grandmother's overbearing personality, to look at it in a different light. Or he may have decided, you know, she's right. It's hard for her. So we're going to call together, meaning we'll put on the speaker and I'm going to say good Shabbos and then Shana's going to say good Shabbos. This way she doesn't have to make the phone call alone. There are other resolutions to this. But because she kept quiet and procrastinated, he resented it more and more till he blew up. Zev, attempting to please Shana, didn't tell her how important that gesture was to him. He never said, you know, it's really important that you call my grandmother. He didn't ask her, is there some reason you don't want to call her in a calm way? If he would have said that, he may have discovered the problem right away and he may have been able to solve it. Had he told her, even point blank, he told her, you know, I see you're not calling my grandmother. It's really important for me that she does get a phone call from you. Then Shana, if she would have heard this, she would have realized that she needs to explain her reluctance to her husband. She needs to explain to her husband why she's reluctant. And perhaps she would have either decided to bite the bullet and make the phone call anyway, or Zev would work out with her to call together. But instead, because she didn't speak up, it caused her husband, Zev, to allow his resentment to fester. So when it came to this Shuas controversy, whether we're going to be near the yeshiva or by the parents, each one has strong feelings about what the choice is, the right one. One or the other will be unhappy with the outcome, even if outwardly they're mevater. whichever way they're mavater. The wife finally agrees, yeah, okay, we won't go to my parents, we'll go near the yeshiva. Or the husband says, you know, forget it, I'm not going to yeshiva, I'm going to go to your parents. What happens is this still resentment. They have to work on it, yes, but there's still resentment. And they're going to be together, Yontif. You know, sometimes they do arrange with certain Yomim Tovim. Yom Kippur, it happens a lot. Sometimes Rosh Hashanah, where they actually go separate, whatever. Shavuos, generally not. But they know they have to be in Yontif, generally speaking, in one place. But what happens is this quote-unquote loser will put on a nice smile and go on happily. And instead, it would be better to work it through, agree to disagree, and compromise that different, that the next Shavuos will be the other way around, or whatever it is. But then they have to accept that they see things differently and work through it. So they both envision themselves. Here's the issue of idealism, which is a healthy thing. You want to have an ideal vision of marriage, but they envision themselves always being Meiser Nefesh, always giving, always sacrificing for the sake of the other. That's a goal, by the way. That's an ideal. That's what we should strive for. But if you think that that's the only way, and you think that you're holding that way all the time, as being human, that's where you get hurt. But they were sincere, and they're still sincere. But there were a lot of points missing in their pre-chuppah reality. They thought that if they sacrifice, it'll be noticed and appreciated. Right? They thought at least that. I'm going to be meisa nefesh for my wife or for my husband, but they're going to see it and give me akaras hatayif. But it doesn't always work that way. Not because people are selfish, but because of lack of awareness and many other reasons. So, let's say the wife is preparing a supper, Shana, is preparing supper or something for Zev that he enjoys, even though he would prefer something else. He likes roasted chicken. It grosses her out, the roasted chicken, but Zev likes it. So she'll make roasted chicken. Or the Shana's sister and brother-in-law is in Florida and they're invited for Shabbos. He doesn't want to go because he finds them snobbish with their nose stuck up in the sky. And she says, I can't do it. I can't take their snootiness. Their gaiva drives me nuts. But either one says, Shana says, I'm going to make that roasted chicken, even though it grosses me out because it's good for Zev. And Zev says, I'm going to swallow my pride and I'm going to deal with it and I'm just going to go because this is what I want. They want to please each other, but they expect that the response should be with pleasure, which means when Zev sees that roasted chicken, that Shana's expecting to him to be extra communicative, extra affectionate, because she gave that to him. And Zev isn't doing that. He's quiet at the table when he's eating the chicken. Shana asks, could we take a walk later? And he says, no, I'm too tired. And all of a sudden, Shana's expectation of what Vatranas is, she got disappointed. She gave up of herself, and Zev didn't show his Akaras Atay back. Same thing with Zev. He's rolling his eyes. His brother-in-law is in his gaivadik away, talking about how the best way to heat his indoor swimming pool. And he's assuming that his wife needs to know, that knows that she owes me big time, that I'm going through this Gehenim, dealing with this brother-in-law and staying here for a whole Shabbos. That's torture for me. She should realize how much I gave to her for this. And she owes me big, when in reality, she didn't seem particularly appreciative. She fell asleep, took a nap, leaving him with the brother-in-law alone. He feels betrayed. She doesn't see how much she was mice and nefesh for me. What's going on? And this Vatranis is a very serious thing. It could cause a lot of damage. Now, again, this is a shear that very often when you hear it in pre-marriage, you don't hear about this aspect of it. It needs a balance. You need to do it with chachma, but it's very important. Let's say, for example, here's another example. Shana is intimidated when there's a room full of strangers. She has this social anxiety. Zev says, you know, we have a yeshiva dinner. Please come to the yeshiva dinner. Okay, so to make roasted chicken, fine, but to go into a whole strange environment, very, very challenging. I just simply can't do it. But Zev was looking forward to this all the time, to bring his wife to the event. Let's say they both have different approaches to child rearing. Shana, maybe because she's dealing with the kids all the time, lets some misbehavior slide by. Zev believes, no, you need to be consistent, structured. Shana says Zev is rigid. You don't show enough empathy for the children in order for them to be emotionally healthy. And he says, no, you're spoiling them. For each spouse to be mevater is basically you're each giving, you're purposefully allowing to do something that will that in your shita damages the children. So the bottom line is, of all of this, is what this author's premise is, which is so true. And again, I didn't realize how true this was until as I got more into this field, is that couples, we have to be honest with ourselves, we're not always capable of giving in graciously. That's number one. Number two is not every issue is subject to compromise. Number three, they discover that the vatranis will not always be noticed, will not always be appreciated, and will not always be reciprocated. So what happens is they're denying a need, causing resentment to take over the marriage, negative emotions. Now he stresses, which I just said in the beginning of this year, that vatranis is a beautiful ideal. Every Jew should strive for it, to give of the other. And marriage is a work in progress to do everything you can to get to that point. But if you always give in and you're not ready for it, you'll be resentful. It's just the way it is. So it's very, very important. Vatranis sometimes replaces other healthy behaviors that are even healthier, which we're going to explain Be'ezus Hashem in the upcoming shir. Bracha and Hatzlacha.